Today is week two of our church series. I was thinking about it. I have given so many different series on church since I began Awaken back in 2012 or 2010, whichever year it happens to be. I know we were joking about that before. And the challenge is always, okay, well, how do you present a series on the church in a new way, in a way in which other people haven't heard before? It's a fun challenge. And I am really, really excited about today's sermon and church. And I can't wait to give you all this sermon. But we will start with something extremely basic and simple, something that you have heard many, many times before. What is the vision of Awaken? Should I quiz you? What's the vision of Awaken? All right, you've all been here years. Do I need to teach on the vision every single week until we get it? All right, who remembers it to be this? Create followers of Jesus. You've all heard me say this, right? Several times. All right, thank you, Joe. Someone's listening to me. Now, this is really simple, really basic. Question, where did we get this vision from? Matthew chapter 28, Jesus has been crucified, he's resurrected, he goes to his disciples, and he gives them this last charge before he ascends to heaven. So before Jesus disappears, before he leaves, he goes to his disciples and he says, here's what I want you all to do. You have walked with me for 3 years. Now I am leaving this mission. I am placing it in your hands. Here's what he says. Jesus came to them, his disciples, and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely, you're not alone. Even if my physical presence isn't here with you, surely I am with you always. Wherever, I mean, those words are comforting. I'm with you always. Wherever you go, wherever you step, you're never alone. My presence travels with you. Now, this word, disciple, we have to ask, what exactly is a disciple? Because this is a word that we don't use very often in our modern day language. You might use it in church, but my guess is that you're not at work during the week talking about disciples. So what do we mean, or what does Jesus mean when he uses this word disciple? A disciple is a follower, a student, or we could say this, a disciple is someone learning to practice a particular way of living. What is Jesus's mission to his followers? Go and make more followers, make more disciples. That's why at Awaken, we go Christian faith 101, create followers of Jesus, create disciples. Because I think at the heart of what it means to be a church, that's why the church exists, to make more followers of Jesus, for us to come here and to learn, well, what does it mean to live in the way of Jesus? Now, in the ancient world, there were many, many different rabbis. You could call a rabbi a teacher. Jesus was one of these rabbis, one of these teachers. And you could choose, if you were in the ancient world, you would choose amongst all these different rabbis, okay, whose way of life, whose teaching do I like the most? Oh, I like this rabbi over here. I like this rabbi. And so you would go and you would follow this rabbi. You would go follow this rabbi. Jesus puts it this way, my yoke. That's another way of describing this, of following an ancient rabbi. Whose yoke would you learn to carry? Whose way of living did you want to emulate? In the ancient world, there was this phrase, it was a blessing. May you be covered in the dust of the rabbi. In the ancient world, you don't have paved streets. Blacktop was not a thing in the first century. Instead, and also the shoes that you're all wearing didn't quite look like that. Mary kind of would have looked like that because most people would have been wearing sandals. So you would have been walking around the streets looking like this. Your feet would have been pretty gnarly. Many of you might have wanted to go each night to the spa for a pedicure. Your feet would get pretty dusty. This blessing, may you be covered in the dust of the rabbi, it means that you are traveling so closely behind this teacher that when he walks, the dust that he would have been kicking up from his sandals, from walking, would then blow onto your feet. So the blessing is, may you be covered in dust of the rabbi, means may you be traveling so closely to this teacher that the dust that gets kicked up when this teacher walks lands on your feet. In other words, pay close attention. May you be watching. May you be walking with this teacher. Now, in our world today, and if you grew up in the 80s like me, I guarantee you, you will know this phrase. I want to be like who? I want to be like Mike. Ever? I want to be like Mike, sticking the tongue out when you're going to slam dunk a basketball. Who had a pair of Air Jordans growing up? I always wanted them, but my parents never bought them for me. Christmas 2023, Air Jordans, we're bringing them back. And it was basically this whole idea of, I want to be a follower. I want to be just like Mike. What I see Mike do, I want to do it just like Mike. If he walks around with his tongue out, I want to walk around with my tongue out. If he wears Air Jordans, well, if I wear Air Jordans, maybe I can be just as cool as Michael Jordan. And in our world today, we've kind of progressed beyond simply the be like Mike, and we have influencers, people with thousands of followers. It's actually a full-time job to be a social media influencer. Imagine that 10 years ago. Like, what are you talking about? So you're just going to talk about things, and you're going to like wear a shirt, and people are going to pay you to do that on social media? Like, what is this odd job that we're talking about? We all have our role models. We all have our mentors. And the thing about influencers, role models, and mentors is that these are people that we desire to model our lives on. If I were to ask you, who are your mentors? Who are your role models? Who are the people that influence you? My guess is you would all have people who come to mind. There's people that you look to and you say, wow, you know what? What they have, I want something of what they have. The way that they live, I want to, in some way, I want to live like that. I want to be like them. This is what it meant to be a disciple in the first century. We're saying, I want to be a little bit like this rabbi, or I want my whole life to look like this rabbi or this teacher's life. So when we talk about following or creating followers of Jesus, we're saying we want our lives to look like Jesus's life. We are looking to Jesus because there is something about his life. There's something about his teaching. There's something about the way in which he lived. And we're saying we want to be just like that. And that's what we're hoping for, to be covered in the dust of Jesus. So we look to his life, his teachings, and we desire the life that Jesus is inviting us into. How do we do this? We do it by reading scripture. We believe in scripture. We discover what it means to live like Jesus, what it means to be a follower of Jesus. We do it through prayer, trusting that the Spirit meets us in those moments and reveals to us which direction to walk with our lives. And we do it within a cohort, within a community of people. It's what we're doing here on a Sunday morning. It's what we do on a Wednesday evening. We gather together because we know on our own, well, it's much harder to walk that path. But if we can gather together with others who are on that same path with us, well, then maybe we might be able to make a little more progress together instead of individually. Now, let's look at the calling of the first disciples as told in the book of Mark. Here's how Jesus called his disciples, because I think there is something really, really profound about what Jesus was doing and what it means for us today. Here's Mark chapter 1, so right in the beginning of the ministry of Jesus. He has no followers. He has just created his Facebook account, and Mark Zuckerberg is the only person that's following him. And he's like, all right, I need to create some more followers. How does he do this? Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee. He was just walking. He was just going along, normal life, and he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. It's just a normal September morning. A few brothers, they're out there fishing. They're doing their job. Jesus is walking along, and what does he say? He says, hey, come follow me, and I will send you out to fish for people. What are we told? What does Mark tell us? At once, they left their nets and followed him. It's a funny story. Imagine you're at your job. It's Monday morning, 10 o'clock a.m. All of a sudden, some strange person comes walking by. Because remember, Jesus isn't known at this point. Some strange person that you have never seen walks up to you and says, hey, get off your computer. Come follow me. The patient that you're working with, forget them. Leave them on the mat. Come follow me. And Debbie leaves her patient right there on the floor, unable to get up, and follows Jesus. Here's another example, Mark 1, a little bit further in the story. When he had gone a little farther, Jesus has just called Andrew, Simon. Now he's going a little bit further. He now has Mark Zuckerberg and two other followers with him. He keeps going. He saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat preparing their nets. A few more fishermen. Now, without delay, he sees them. He looks up. Without delay, he called them. And what did they do? They left their father. They left the family business to follow Jesus. They left their father. Actually, this is even worse than the first guys. They left their father in the boat. They're there fishing with their father. Jesus like, hey, come follow me. They're like, see you, Dad. We're out of here. Peace. They go swimming to shore. Their dad's in the boat holding all the nets. Like, guys, I can't do this on my own. I mean, these are funny stories. Immediately. They left their father with the hired men, and they followed Jesus. One more disciple. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. Jesus must really love lakes. Again, he's out there besides the lake. There's a large crowd that came to him because now he's gaining popularity. Now people are starting to pay attention to him. What is this weird man doing? He began to teach them. As he walked along, Jesus didn't just teach stationary. Jesus would teach as people were walking along with him. So as they were walking along with this crowd, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. He's walking along again. Someone is at their job. This time it's Wednesday afternoon. They've been there. They're tired of their job. They're sitting there. Tax collectors would not have been people looked upon favorably. And yet what does Jesus do with this large crowd watching? Hey, Levi, follow me. And what does Levi do? He leaves all the money in the booth. He gets up and he follows Jesus. Now, three things for us to look at about these stories. Three observations. First, Jesus initiated the call to follow him. Jesus was the one who sought these disciples out. He's walking along a lake. Hey, you, follow me. Here's essentially what he's saying. I see you. I see you out there in the boat. I see you sitting in that tax collector's booth. I see you. You have what it takes. I want you for my crew. I need you to be a part of our team. Second, Jesus is an unknown at this point in the story. He's an unknown. We're right in the beginning of his ministry. No one knows who Jesus is. Following him, this is the wild card. This is a huge risk that these disciples took in order to follow this obscure rabbi, which for me raises the question, what was going on in their lives that they were willing to drop everything to follow Jesus? Was there a certain level of dissatisfaction with their life? Was there a level of boredom? Frustration? Had they been unqualified for another occupation or to follow another rabbi? Had they been dismissed? Did they have this desire within them for something beyond what they currently were experiencing? Jesus is an unknown. If an unknown stranger came up to you and said, follow me, what are the chances that you are going to drop everything and follow that stranger? Not highly likely. Yet there was something going on in each of these disciples' lives that made them say, you know what? I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to see where this leads. I don't love where I'm at right now. There's something more that I want to experience. Then a third observation. Jesus invites them into a larger story than the one that they had been living. Think about the first call of Andrew and Simon in the boat, come follow me. Instead of fishing for fish, you will now fish for people. This is expansion. This is your life. I want to enlarge your life. I want to invite you into a larger, more compelling story than the one that you are currently living. Let me introduce you to this man, Steve Chalk, from the UK, which means he has a really cool British accent. Now, I came across Steve Chalk in 2015. He was being interviewed as a guest on a podcast that I listened to. Steve Chalk is a Christian leader and a social activist who founded in the UK a group known as Oasis. Here's how Oasis is described. Oasis is a community transformation movement working in and beyond the UK, and they do work pertaining to housing and education, anti-trafficking. So they are heavily, heavily involved in the community. They want to see the community that they are a part of transformed. In this podcast, Steve Chalk began to give a little bit of the backstory as to how he founded Oasis and what it was like in the beginning. He sent this message out wherever he could to whoever could hear him. And he said, I am looking for people to drop everything and to come and be a part of what we are doing here in the UK. Whoever you are, if you hear this message, here's my vision. Here's what I want to see happen within the UK, and then we can expand further from here. And I want you to move, to leave your home, everything that's familiar, and to come be a part of our movement here. And he said this. Basically, his message was summed up like this. Come to London, work really hard, and maybe we can provide you a salary 6 months down the line. So he wasn't promising anything. He was promising, come and be a part of what we're doing here. We cannot pay you. You will have to make ends meet on your own somehow. You will have to find another job. Now, he said loads of people signed up, and they moved from where they were across the world in order to be a part of Oasis. He was asked, why was this so? Why would loads of people drop everything to move to London? Here was his answer. Because of vision. The story that he gave people to root their lives in. It's all about a larger, compelling story. You weren't promising anything. Why would because the story, because of the vision of what we were doing. And people said, yeah, I want to be a part of that. I want to take a risk. Why? Because we all want to know that our life matters. It's what you want. At the end of the day, you want to know that you are making a difference in this world. You've been given the gift of life, and you want to use that gift in a way that matters, in a way that contributes to the healing or the transformation of the communities that you're a part of. We all want to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. Stories matter. What story is your life living? See, when Jesus goes to these disciples, he is inviting them into a story that says, you can be a part of changing the world. You are someone who has great value, potential, worth. There is something within you, and together, we can make a difference in the world. Together, we can use our talents, the gift of life that we have been given, in order to do something really special, to share love, to share grace with other people. I mean, this is age old. Stories matter. Steve Chalk invited others into a compelling story, and people were willing to drop everything because they said, you know what? I want to be a part of that. My life feels really small, and I want to take a risk, and I want to be a part of something bigger. And that's what Jesus was saying. When he was saying, follow me, or in John, the way in which he invited his disciples was, come and see, Jesus was saying, join me. Join me in what I'm doing. Watch my way of living. Try this way of living and see what happens. Practice this particular way of being in the world, and let's see what we can build together. For us as a church, there are three implications, and I'll say specifically for Awaken. First, church helps you unlearn toxic and unhealthy discipling that you encounter throughout the week. So a question for us. Have you ever found yourself covered in the dust of fear? The dust of hate? Of anxiety? Vengeance? Selfishness? Unworthiness? Despair? You ever found yourself covered with the dust telling you that you're lacking something, or the dust to disengage with this world and just sit it out on the couch? I mean, that's the kind of programming, unfortunately, that we come across much of the week. These stories that make us shrink back and make it about us, or these stories that tell us to fear, to be anxious about where we are. And so for church, we're after a different type of dust. Not the dust of fear, but rather the dust of grace. The dust of peace and mercy and love and sacrifice and forgiveness and laying down violence. So why does church exist? So that we can remove all the toxic dust that's built up on our feet throughout the week. And so that we can be covered with a different type of dust, that we can move in the world in a different way than the way that we often find ourselves being invited to throughout the week. Second, church reminds you of your worth. Why do we gather each Sunday? So that you can be reminded of your worth. When I was in Israel, we went to this church. This window was facing the east. Church would meet at sunrise. And the seats would be facing, I see Ted saying, I'm not going to do that. He doesn't want any of that sunrise service stuff. So before the sun would come up, or as the sun was rising, everyone who was attending church, they would go, they would sit, they would be facing the east with this window, and they would see the sun begin to rise. Because it would be a reminder of grace and resurrection and new life and forgiveness. And so once a week, a group of people in the first century, followers of Jesus, would gather together and they would watch the sun rise. Because it was a reminder that, yes, things die. Things get dark. There's death in this world. We experience death in our lives. There's sin. All the reality. But also, deeper than all of that is the power and truth of resurrection. And so the group, the followers of Jesus, every single Sunday would be reminded about the resurrection of Christ. When I think about church, why we meet, I think resurrection should be at the center. Because I think, if you're like me, I could use a reminder of resurrection on a weekly basis. There's a lot that tells me otherwise in the world. And so to sit and to be reminded that resurrection is a power that is still at work in the world, I mean, that might be a calming idea. That might fill my spirit with a little bit of hope. And so church, at the center of why church exists, it's to be a reminder of the resurrection power of Christ that is still alive and at work in your life today. Yeah, resurrection happened 2,000 years ago, but it's also happening right now. And I feel like we've kind of gotten away from that a little bit. I feel like every single Sunday should be a focus on resurrection and grace and forgiveness. And so that way you would walk out of church being reminded you're loved and you're forgiven and the new is ever before you. So when you leave, here's my goal. When you leave church, and I do think about this quite a bit, when you leave here on a Sunday morning, my hope, my prayer is that you would walk out being reminded of how much you were loved by God. That you would walk out of here being reminded of the grace that is upon you. And that the Spirit that is always birthing something new is before you. And then here's my third implication about this. Church invites you into a larger vision of what your life could look like. Oftentimes, churches can get bogged down in, you need to pray more, you need to volunteer more, you need to give more, you need to invite your friends more on a Sunday morning. And all that stuff is really important. It is. But if we stay there, that's kind of narrowing of your world. That's uninspiring. What you want every Sunday is to be invited into a story that tells you your life can make a difference. And you can partner with God. You can be at work with the Spirit, bringing healing to all the places that you go throughout the week, your schools, your workplaces, your family life. You want to be invited into a story that says, your very life matters, and you can play a role in the work that God is doing in the world. This is not a very compelling life. Sitting in front of a big screen TV all day, all night long. It raises the question, well, is life meant to be consumed? Or are we meant to engage life? Are we supposed to just be passive observers of life, where we sit and just consume entertainment all the time? I love Neil Postman's book, Amusing Ourselves to Death. Anyone hear of that one? I love the title of that book. Written, I think, in the 80s, right? I mean, 30 years later, still rings true. Amusing ourselves to death. This isn't what you want. You don't want to spend hour after hour staring into a blue screen. You want your life to count for something. You want to drop your net. And you want to bring healing to the people that you know. You want your home to be a place of love, a harbor of grace for those who are struggling in the world. You want to create a sanctuary where others can come to you and they can find peace from all the fear and anxiety that cripples them throughout the week. You want grace and love and mercy just to flow from you so that when others come in contact with you, when they talk with you, in some way, they experience the presence of Christ. That's what Jesus was inviting his disciples into. That's the type of life he was inviting them to live. And it's the same invitation for us today, because you want your life to matter. You want to discern your role in bringing God's healing, love, and reconciliation to the earth. I believe that you all have immense power within you. And oftentimes, we don't discover what that power is. Maybe we're distracted, or maybe there's other things that are vying for our attention. Church is a place where we come so that we can discover what that Spirit-birthed power is and how we can then go use it in a way that brings transformation to our world. So that's why at Awaken, our vision is to create followers of Jesus. It's what Jesus was doing when he walked the earth. It's what Jesus told his first disciples to do. Go and replicate this. Make more followers. Make more disciples. Because if you were to make more disciples, if more people were people of love, grace, and mercy, imagine what the world would look like. Imagine what it would look like if through your life, other people experienced the grace of Christ and then they started living as people who weren't so quick to get even with others. but chose the path of Jesus, of forgiveness and sacrifice and love. I mean, imagine what the world would look like if there were more people who lived in this way. And so that's why for us at Awaken, this is what we're after, to be covered in the dust of Jesus and then see others covered in his dust as well.